Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to whatever we're doing here now.
Uncharted Treasures.
Uncharted Treasures. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's episode 3. I'm Dustin.
And I'm Devin.
And we are going to talk today about Pablo Escobar and his hidden treasures, or maybe hidden treasures, sort of hidden treasures. And it's not really treasures, it's just a lot of money.
A lot of money. There's some rhinos still in Colombia.
No, rhinos or hippos?
I think maybe both.
Oh my God, there's hippos for sure.
There's
I don't know about rhinos.
In Colombia.
Yeah,
it's well.
The guy had so much money, not only did he bury it and hide it and do everything else you can, he made a zoo, his own personal zoo. But before we start this, we're going to do a little bit of housekeeping and do a little bit of just announcements, because we're trying to get this off the board, off the charts, off the something.
Off the map, right? And into reality.
Yeah. I mean, of course, like if you listen to us, like the 7 to 12 to 35 people that you are, rate us, review us, iTunes, all that fun stuff.
Yeah. You can also send us messages through UnchartedTreasuresPodcast@gmail.com. Anything. I'm out of school. I just finished finals.
We'll take whatever we can get at this point.
About a month work before I go back to school. But we also have a Discord where you can just talk, share, you know, article links.
What's the Discord?
Discord is a messaging app.
No.
What do you mean?
Is there like a name they have to look for? For Discord?
It's Uncharted Treasures.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
It's pretty straightforward. Much more easier than our email.
And if you're like over 50, I shouldn't say that. But then we have a Facebook group too.
Yeah, we do. We are not advertising yet.
No.
But we do have a Patreon page. We do have a package of tier packages that are available. It's $5, but the treasure is located. It's hidden inside the quest and the blog post that we do.
There we go.
And if you do happen to find season one treasure, you'll definitely make your monies back on $5.
Yeah. I mean, we're you know, I think we've given some hints, right? Or maybe we haven't. So here's your, like, first or couple of hints, right?
Yeah.
We're supporting local. We're doing it. This is, I mean, eventually we're going to do it globally. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
And then so we're trying to, you know, support local, like I just said. And we're also trying to make it worthwhile treasure that's obviously, you know, we're just two podcasters and, you know, Devin just said he's a student and I'm a small business owner. So we're trying to do the best we can with what we have. And we think we picked out some pretty fun treasure for season one.
Right. And the,
also helping season two and three and whatever else grow if we can.
The true essence of treasure should also tell a story. And we want to encompass that into every kind of treasure we hid. And the best way to do that is to incorporate with local businesses and provide those services or those treasure that they can offer you.
Yeah.
Especially in, and
yeah, I think it's great.
We're trying to find unique areas, so beautiful scenery, hopefully, if it's available. and then give that to you as well. And then I also got done reading Pirate Hunters by Robert Kirson, and it's fantastic. I cannot understand. It's a beautiful intro. If you're new to treasure hunting, they find a Nazi U-boat off the coast of New Jersey. Right, they weren't supposed to be that far.
Okay,
they lost a couple guys during that venture.
The treasure hunters did.
Yes.
Okay.
And they form a beautiful relationship. I don't want to ruin too much. But
yeah,
they end up going.
True spoiler alerts. Here.
Right, yeah, and this is not what this is.
Yeah.
And it's just a beautiful story. There's a little bit of mob action.
Oh.
And then almost when you think that all hope is gone, is lost, they find a clue.
Less Brokeback Mountain, more Indiana Jones.
Yeah, exactly.
Got you. Okay.
Yeah. It's a romance.
Yeah, but perfect. So, recommendation. What was it called?
Pirate Hunters.
Pirate Hunters. Okay. All right, so let's start episode 3, Pablo Escobar. If you know nothing about Pablo Escobar, you must be young-ish, and you haven't watched any form of Narcos, right?
No. I mean, also, we do like to mention Narcos because I've learned more Spanish from Narcos than I have on my 3 attempts of Rosetta Stone.
It's a great, great scripted show. But he was, he's no longer living, if you didn't know. And he was one of the main...
Medellin
cartel drug bosses in Colombia. So he... This is treasure in the most pure sense of the word of being money. I mean, he buried so much money in the countryside of Colombia and many other places because they were using liquid cash. I mean, they couldn't invest drug money. That's hard to do. And he bought businesses and we're going to try and get into some of this, but this is this quick background of Pablo Escobar. And what we're kind of researching or what our research has turned up. And we've got a few different fun stories about him. And fun's a little rough because ultimately he was a pretty bad guy. But he also is, I mean, he hid treasure. I mean, you know,
Pablo had, I mean, hundreds of estates.
Yeah.
There's also, so not alone to go with money, but there's also art like Pablo Picasso. There was some art that was hidden. There's cars, unique cars. He was a very renowned collector. And people would often send him information about their bank accounts just so he could store money. So
yeah, I mean, because you got to think, he had so much of it. If you've never seen Blow, that's a good movie where they're hiding money in the walls.
Oh, it's so sad.
It's like that, right? They are hiding money literally everywhere. One of the fun stories about Pablo is they had $1 million rats because literally the rats would eat money and he'd deduct 10% of the stash money due to damages of water or rats eating the money or it being lost.
I mean, he ran it like a business.
So 10%, he just knew off the top 10% was gone. And that's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. So I know we're going to get into the Pablo legend, but do we know how much, I forgot how much he made or how much, he was on the Forbes list at one point, right? I mean.
Well, it was $18 billion every year.
So, I mean, this is in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is.
He was on the Forbes list, and.
That's crazy.
At one point in time, they were shipping 80% of the cocaine in the world. And here's a fun little fact. So when cocaine popped off, there was one company in New Jersey who sold ether, and that's in the production of cocaine. Okay. Right. And if you invested in them, I mean, you would have made so much money because they were one of the only suppliers of ether at the time. So you had to go through this company. The main source for this is the accountant's story, and it was written by his brother, Roberto
Escobar.
Yes. Yep. And so they had a number of accountants. But his brother was not mentioned in Narcos because of a deal that they had packaged in case because his brother is still alive, although he was damaged from a bomb, like a letter bomb, which is interesting. But he did get a little bit damaged through that, injured.
Yeah, so our main source is basically brother, Pablo's brother.
Who was with him the whole time. And
we're going to try and... We originally wanted to do two episodes of Pablo Escobar, and then we realized that, number one, it's just too much information. It's too much of the history, so we're going to cover that very briefly, but we're really going to try and isolate or talk about the money that they have lost and some of the money that is found, because some people have found this money, right? And there's... Obviously, we just made that joke of hippopotamuses and rhinos in Colombia when they're not native to that, if you didn't know, and they're just breeding and they're actually becoming they currently are still a problem in Colombia.
Right.
Because he had a zoo and it just, once he died, no one took care of the zoo, so the animals got out.
He also loved birds, and there's a lot of unique species of birds that are
so,
in Colombia.
So starting with Pablo Sr., or I should say Roberto...
His
Gavaria,
grandfather,
right?
Yeah, his grandfather, yeah.
So his grandfather was a bootlegger and a smuggler, and he shared and passed down the family story that he found a buried treasure filled with precious stone and fine jewelry. And according to the book, no one ever learned of the sources of these riches. But I mean, Pablo was from Medellin, which is not a rich... I mean, it's not a rich area. It was very poor.
Their mother was a teacher. Their dad was a rancher. And early on in the childhood... The dad lost his stock.
His due
to
cattle,
to a virus early on, and they would often go, I mean, they were pretty pretty brain prepped at the time. So
a lot of during his childhood, Pablo was often quoted that he'd be a millionaire before he was 22. He started making money on the side in college. So you know, Pablo's mother, being a teacher, obviously put in the you know, do your work and get an education and you know, go that kind of route. But he was a hustler, right? He grew up poor. He wanted to make more money. He was saying, I'm going to be a millionaire. So he would, you know, there's a rumor that he made money stealing tombstones and reselling them. He befriended a popular smuggler, and as the smuggler ran into some issues, Pablo fixed the issues and didn't really charge the guy anything. So,
To further elaborate on the story, this is where you first see in the first episode of Narcos, where he's running this, you know, vast shipments of trucks, and they're delivering electronics and other items before he was in
black market stuff.
Yeah, before he was in the drug business. And there was a local smuggler. I don't remember his name, and it's also not relevant really for the story.
No.
But the smuggler would often have trouble with the shipments going missing. So Pablo went to the workers and the security that provided each shipment, and he was like, look, guys, if no shipments get missing, I'll give you a cut of each shipment that goes through. And sure enough, it worked, and there was no loss in shipment.
We're finding that he's a good businessman. We're finding that he's able to you know, understand the workings of how to get something from point A to point B, and with the least, you know, amount of resistance. So he's helping doing this shipment. He made around $120,000 each load, and this is and that's done twice a month. So he's making $240,000. Like, that's a lot of money when it comes to, you know, in the probably early or late 70s, right?
Yeah, it's mucho dinero. Yeah.
I mean, man. So he's trading this black market contraband, and he does it for about 3 years, and then he finds a kind of a way into the drug trade through, is this cucaracha?
Yeah.
Or cucaracho?
The cockroach. Yeah.
Yeah. And you kind of see that into Narcos again, and so much money, obviously, that he was losing it and didn't really care. I mean, you know, he cared, but he didn't know what to do with it all. Right? He couldn't just have this cash just lying around. So he was investing in businesses, investing in homes, investing in real estate. I think you knew the thing. Didn't he have? He had tons of homes.
Yeah. So when he wanted to become a politician, and before, kind of early on in his career, he was kind of known as owning a taxing company and a real estate person, because he bought up, you know, areas. You know, there was a Forbes article where he was spending 10 grand alone on rubber bands just to fit his money.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he was the rubber band man for sure.
So some of the things he had to do, or some of the fun thing about this treasure or trying to find it, is he would build these houses, these caletas is what they're called, or their hiding places or things of that. But he'd build fake walls, and he'd hide the money into the wall and then wall it up through styrofoam or what. Like, he basically built his own little, like, safe, except it looked like a wall, and it should have been a wall, and yet it held, you know, $5 to $10 million worth of cash. And this was something he did all the time. I mean, constantly, because he had so much. I mean, he was making what'd you say, $18 billion a year?
Yeah.
That amount of money is unfathomable in cash. Like, what are you talking about here, right? Like, most people can kind of picture $1 million. Not a lot of people can picture $100 million in cash. Like, that's
great. I mean, at the height of his career, he owned over 400 farms throughout Colombia alone. So it's just crazy. And he did reach out in real estate. He owned products, and he owned Miami. He had a bunch of locations, Italy.
Yeah, he was trying to spend the money and
reinvest it.
Yeah, I would say reinvest, definitely in the community, but also, you know, he was running a cartel, so it wasn't the greatest of ventures.
So how the Medellin cartel worked is he would use his logistics and services and his protection, along with local dealers, and they would give him part of the profit.
Yeah.
So he would offer for a number of drug lords, and they would use his services upon I mean, he would take millions up front and then he would double their money and give it back to them.
Yeah.
So it's just, it was kind of like drop shipping, but for cocaine.
So one of the main things here, and this is kind of where one of our first, where we know known treasure is, in Colombia, he was known to bury these blue plastic bins, or like, I guess you'd call them tubs or some, you know, some, I think they usually held like liquid of some sort.
You have to weatherproof it.
Yeah. And he would bury them in his properties or around his properties, or sometimes just in the jungle, obviously. And they would just have cash in them. They'd have, you know, $10 to $20 million in cash in these bins buried under the ground. Because, I mean, again, we're talking about so much money. He couldn't just put it in a bank. It doesn't work that way, right? Like, instantly something's wrong if you, you know, if you don't own an oil company or some form of, like, I don't know, gold company where you're churning this out and making a bunch of profit. So and I'm imagining he wanted to, you know, not pay taxes on things. So he was trying to do everything he could to spend it, you know, or save it in this case. But he owned like Devin said, he owned all the fancy cars. He owned all the you know, motorcycles and such, and even a car belonging to Al Capone. And unfortunately, that was bombed and lost. But this money idea, this idea is, it kind of comes around with where he hid it, and we're gonna kind of get to the end of the story at some point. And you'll see us, you know, there was a farmer that found a significant amount. But to keep going.
Yeah. He hired families to live in these houses.
In the Caletas?
Yes, yes. And most of the times they wouldn't even know about the money that was stored or the items stored in these locations.
Just stay in the house.
And they would just live in the house.
That's awesome.
And early on in Narcos, one of their top accountants, which it's kind of contradictory from the book. But we're just, I think they just did it just to give, you know, give some of the spotlight away from Robert, his brother. But Don, was later he's called. But
yeah.
Blackbeard, they call him Blackbeard because he knew all the locations of the treasure.
Of course, which makes sense, right? We're having fun with it. Like, at this point, you're making so much money, you're so powerful, I'm going to give you a nickname of Blackbeard because that's funny.
Also,
right?
I mean, should do Blackbeard because he's got an interesting background.
Maybe we will, you know. But So, you know, the same thing. For 6 years, you know, Pablo Escobar owned the sword or had the sword of Simon Bolivar, which is like a huge Colombian, like, I mean, that's a huge thing for Colombia. And he had that in his possession because he could. Ultimately, because he could.
From what the book sounded like, he just kind of like, it was kind of just like a side item. Like, it wasn't even a main treasure. He was whatever. They lost it for a little bit.
Yeah.
but it's really important in, you know, the history of Colombia.
Yes.
For one example, he did own an $8 million complex in Florida. He owned property in Spain, famous paintings, and other unique cars. The Colombian government did blow a warehouse full of, you know, rare cars and motorcycles. His friend and second in command, if I believe, Gustavo, used to race cars. And they used to do that early on, pre-drug lord. So one of their first shipments of cocaine, they did buy like kind of like Mini Coopers.
Oh.
And they fixed them up so they can ship and then kind of zoom and hold a little bit of weight. So kind of like the Italian job.
I gotcha.
He was pre-Italian job. I just make that notice.
I like that. All right. So when Pablo started running into trouble with the Cali cartel, is that right?
Correct, yes.
Okay. He was still making money, but things, you know, accounts were still frozen, and it was – this is much more shown in the actual Narcos series. We just talk about that because it really does represent a really – the actor playing Pablo Escobar looks legit just like him, and it's insane. And it just – I mean, it's a little – it's a lot of violent. And it's not for children or anything like that. But if you haven't seen it, it's just really great kind of historically. And if it's a different time, and it's neat to see. It's really neat to see. But you know, Pablo went to jail at one point. There's this whole thing, but in the process of this, he's still powerful. He's still making money. And even up until his death, obviously he was hiding out from my brain left me there, the like special forces of Colombia and also the FBI or something like that.
DEA,
sorry. And even in that realm, he was still, you know, they're still making money. So he's trying to spend it as much as he can. And you see that he built, you know, 800 different soccer fields because he loves soccer, you know, 400 small, nice houses for the people of Medellin. So he's trying to use as much money as he can, but he's also hiding it. So one of the things that he would do was he would take Blackbeard, right? And Blackbeard would have all these locations, and we lost Blackbeard, you said, died, right?
No, or, he got captured by the U.S.
The DEA?
Yes.
Okay.
And it was like a lucky ray because they followed some hitman, I don't remember, but he led it to Blackbeard.
Sure.
But the true Blackbeard from the book is his brother.
Oh, okay.
So I think they did this to make it sure that his brother, because they kind of closure. You know
so
what I mean?
In some levels, like, this is why it's fun, right?
He's a figurehead.
Yeah. So his brother is still alive. And we, you know,
he lost an eye.
Yeah, no harm. You know, we don't want any harm coming to anybody.
He became the true Blackbeard.
Yeah, apparently. But you know, he knows where the treasure is. I mean, where this money is, right? And there was I thought we had it in our notes. I know there was a farmer who bought land and started digging to plant something and found like $400 million in the blue tubs.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try and link to that story. It's just phenomenal, right? He didn't get to keep any of it.
So one thing about when Pablo was incarcerated, one of the terms and conditions that was met with the Colombian government was that he was able to live in a site that he built. So he built this beautiful prison. I can't find the name. La Catedral.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, at the time, if you watch Narcos, there was a raid on there, and there was records left behind. He was a huge fan of Frank Sinatra, and they actually, and he had buried stuff within the soccer field, and there was reportedly millions in the soccer field, but the Colombian government, unannounced to them, they blew it up, just because they thought there was a tunnel underneath, and there was.
Yeah, so this is just one of the links I'll write, and it's not great, but they're covering a documentary, basically. So this is from the Mirror. Oh, I love people. I like when things just happen. But it says, you know, drug boss made a staggering, basically 45, this is from England, £45 million every day, and bought huge country estates, planes, priceless dinosaur fossils, and his children to climb on. For his children to climb on, and he didn't spend, he buried, and the hunt is on to find it. So people are looking for this because there's, you know, it's saying $50 billion, which is, I think, far too high. But there's hundreds of millions of dollars that he would have buried by men, and then they were shot. And no one knew where things were. Awesome. I mean, you know, like that's in the Colombian countryside. And yes, it's buried, and yes, it's, you know, Colombia's a big country. But I mean, how do you, you know, that's kind of fun, right? I mean, that's a neat little thing.
So if we can kind of shift to Roberto for a minute.
Okay.
So Roberto and Pablo were in college at the same time. I believe Pablo went to school for business. Later dropped out because he was a drug kingpin.
Yeah.
And Roberto became an electrical engineer. And he was also he was on the Colombian bicycle team. So he did races, and he would later go on to run his own bicycle company. But they were really savvy. Roberto in particular, he helped his brother design, you know, electronics and security systems on homes. And when they got their first submarine, Roberto himself, you know, rewired all the electronics to make it run efficiently in his needs. One of the things I really like about Roberto is, you know, he didn't have a whole lot of money when he relaunched his bicycle company. So he had this pretty famed career of being a bicycle racer for Colombia. And he started his own company of making bicycles, but he didn't have enough money to market. So what he did was he went and he rented a large load of bicycle parts. He did it on credit. He pretty much went to a buyer and said, hey, he went to stores and like, look, if there's just 5 bicycles, you know, just take 5 bicycles of mine and I, you know, and then we'll work from there. And he had 5 of his close friends go there and buy the bicycles. And then he ordered a full month of bicycle parts, and he had to make up for this because he didn't anticipate, you know, the customer buying so much. But they were really good at marketing. They used what they had.
Roberto was?
Yeah, he really was. And I think that's, you know, admirable. You know, they came from nothing, so they had to work with what they had.
Yeah.
And that's what made this group of the Medellin cartel so creative, because they came from nothing.
Yes. We still don't want you to admire them.
Right, but you gotta the creativity is there.
I mean, take what they did, but maybe, like, use it for good, right? Mm-hmm. Clean up the oceans or something with it.
I mean, please.
I mean, plant trees. I don't know. So to kind of wrap this up in a bow, he made, and the article that I had said 50 billion. So he made 50 billion in his in the lifetime, maybe? All right. And, I mean, we're talking billions of dollars that he made in the 80s. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say at least, you know, hundreds of millions is probably still out there in homes and in the jungle.
Like, what is my question is, so when the Cali cartel took over Miami, right, they took over what's his name? He was a white guy, but anyway, one of my favorite stories about this guy is he ran the Bahamas, and when one of the drug shipments got seized, he was in a plane, he was a pilot. And he dropped loads of money out of the plane onto the government because he was so upset with them that they seized his shipment. And sure enough, when he did this, they never interfered with it again. But what was I trying to say with this?
I don't know.
There was when they overtook the Miami portion of his business. There were bankers, right? He had bankers and institutions on his side. The Medellin cartel took over. So what happened to his funds?
The Cali cartel.
Probably. But how does that happen? How does that transition legally?
None of this is legal. People
would mail him letters of their bank account information. People would open up bank account information, mail it to him. And they're like, look, yo, like, this is a free account. Just use it if you want. Also, Roberto admits that they gave several combination to safes and caletas.
Yeah.
You know, information to hot girls. Granted, they're natural. They're men. You know what I mean? Like, it makes sense. Like, if you're attractive, here you go. Here are the codes. They did that frequently.
Perfect.
So there is
so just spend it, giving hot women money.
I mean, there's
spend.
So much that's unaccounted for.
This is the point. This
drives
the point
me nuts.
Here,
yeah.
Right. Is that in Colombia? And yes, it's a huge country. And you know, obviously, it's not the safest country still. But there's. There's just tubs of money buried in places. I mean, that's insane. There is
what is the resale value on like submarines?
I don't know
what happened.
Well,
to submarine?
And I think you have to. I think the farmer that found money, he had to return it. It was like it's the government's.
Yeah, which is unfortunate.
So you know, again, drop it in the water and it's international waters or something like that at some point. But. Yeah, it's just interesting. It's just interesting in what a drug kingpin had to do with his money.
And so to the last kind of quote to kind of end this is Roberto is quoting this, and this is from his book. And finally, there
what was the book?
The Accountant's Story.
Okay, thanks.
And finally, there is the money. It is impossible to even imagine how much money remains put away somewhere, probably never to be discovered. People who managed millions of dollars got killed without telling anyone where the money was hidden. Or they took the money and disappeared when Pablo was killed. I feel sure that there are undiscovered caletas in houses all over throughout Colombia, but also in New York, Miami, Chicago, and Los Angeles, and other cities in which Medellin did business. I am also certain there are bank accounts in countries whose numbers have been lost or forgotten, and the nerve will never open again. And there is money hidden and buried in the ground. For me, it's over. And I still have pains from the bomb and from my memories. I live quietly with the help I need.
Crazy.
Beautiful, right? Beautiful.
I don't know if it's beautiful, but it is insane. It's insane the amount of money they hid. So there's Pablo Escobar's treasure. It's literally scratching the surface. Of his entire story and you know like Devin was saying, the Medellin and the Cali cartel and truly you know, you want to get brass tacks into it, the war on drugs that just
never worked,
didn't
ever
do well, And then the people that made money and then what they had to do with that money. And then, hey, you have two of us talking about it like it's buried treasure, because it is. So, that was Pablo Escobar. That's it. I mean,
that's all we got.
And that was the bigger. Yeah, that was the bigger one of the bunch we've tried to tackle. And I think we did it pretty well. So thanks, everybody. You heard in the beginning the announcements. Like us on the Facebook and all that fun jazz. If you do get this, rate us and review us. We like those things.
Please, yeah. Feedback is how we grow.
Yeah, or we attempt to grow, let's be honest. And then email us at UnchartedTreasurePod, right? Mm-hmm. @gmail.com. Devin checks it all the time. He'd just love to get an email. He just won.
Please, send me an email.
Just somebody send him an email.
No spoiler alerts for the treasure. That's not out of the question. But if you have questions, we can give you hints.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, we might as well.
Spend the $5, get access to the quotes.
We only have a few more. We're on episode 3, so we have about 6 or 7 episodes left in this season. And right. then the treasure is buried. And then it'll be ready to go.
Yeah. So, all right. Thank you, folks. Yeah,
thanks.